Hello guys, and welcome to a special edition of the Black Spin Global Podcast. Lucy isn't here, but I am joined by the wonderful Tomani Carrier of The Guardian, as we come to you live from Queens. Tomani, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, very good. And thank you for joining me as well for this special edition.
No problem.
So we're currently on site at Queens, which is a first for like the platform, which is very exciting. Lucy obviously couldn't be with us because we could only get the one accreditation for this event. Lucy should have been in Birmingham, but with like Kevin Watson and Sloane Stephens putting out, there was like no need for her to go. So we'll be in Eastbourne next week, which is going to be very exciting, and we'll bring you a pod from there as well. So look out for that and stay tuned. But yeah, this is just basically a quick episode to kind of like, yeah, just kind of sum up like what I've kind of, yeah, seen over these past few days, and it's been a lot basically, in a good way obviously. So yeah, to me, like, if I can kind of just get your thoughts on Paul Jubb first. So coming through qualifying, and like, yeah, he did lose in the first round. He had Botik van der Schansloop, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name. World number 29, lost in three sets, but put up a really good fight, and I was just really impressed with him. Like, basically coming through qualifying, he had two top 100 wins, and yeah, like, just a good, I'd say a successful run, even though he did lose in the first round. Like, how would you sum up, yeah, Paul Jubb's Queens?
Yeah, I think he had a really good week, probably one of the best weeks of his career. Last week in Nottingham, he played against Jay Clark, and you know, that was a tough loss. He won five games, and I'm sure he was very disappointed there, but he came to Queens, you know, big opportunity, and he beat two top 100 players in James Duckworth and Steve Johnson. I think before this tournament, I believe he'd only beaten Andre Rublev in 2019, back when Rublev was ranked in the 70s. So like, to come here and, you know, against big competition and beat two top 100 players is great. And then, you know, once he got into the main draw against van der Schansloop,
sounds much better than how I
mean, I'm still a work in progress here. But, he also like put up a fight against a top that, you know, top 30 player who's, you know, who's been going deep in big tournaments. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's all in all like one of the best weeks of his career, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And like, just on that van der Schansloop match, or just Botik, I didn't really think there was much difference in terms of level. Like, even though obviously, I think Jubb's in the 200s, like,
yeah,
220, I think it's, or 220.
Yeah, around 227.
Yeah, like, and obviously, yeah, Botik is top 30. Like, there was very little in terms of like difference. Obviously, the big points, yeah, Botik played better, but I thought, yeah, Jubb really put on he represented himself like pretty well, and he could be quite proud like of his, yeah, just overall performance. And I think he was like quite happy, speaking to him obviously after in press.
Eugene Blatzman, congrats as well, like, for going through qualifying. Just want to know, like, in terms of the level today, obviously Botik is number 29 in the world. You got two top 100 wins in qualifying. Like, did you find the level, like, how did you find the level in terms of change? Was there much of a change?
I think, you know, there's definitely no easy matches, and all the guys at this level make you win the matches, and I think they all serve very well. So, you know, breaking is a lot tougher. You know, I think that's one area of my game I really want to improve, is my serve and making it tougher for guys to break me. You know, because when I'm feeling it from the baseline, you know, I back myself against, you know, most players. So I think those first exchanges, I definitely feel the difference from other levels to the top players who I've played this week. I think that's a big difference.
The news broke about him getting a wild card for Wimbledon, which again is very well deserved. So it was like a bittersweet kind of like period for him, like obviously just coming off a loss, but then also to get the news about you know, getting a wild card into Wimbledon, like I said, it's well deserved. So yeah, we look forward to seeing Jubb at Wimbledon, and also shout out to Jay Clark too, because he also got a wild card, which is again well deserved, putting in good work this year as well, winning a challenger, and yeah, just kind of doing his thing on the challenger tour. I want to get on to Francis Tiafoe now. So an interesting one. Like, I actually met Francis like in person for the first time on the Sunday, which was media day, and I wasn't really here for media day. I was really just here to watch Jubb win his qualifying match, and then just saw Francis practicing, and then kind of like just hung around basically to kind of like see him, and it was cool like to kind of basically meet him in person for the first time. So yeah, shouts out to Francis. But his, were you gonna say something?
I was gonna say, what was it like?
It was surreal to me. Like in terms of like obviously seeing him on TV and stuff, and like we kind of correspond like via WhatsApp now and again, but we've never met in person. So it was kind of cool to kind of connect like properly. And yeah, he's just good vibes. Like what you see is what you get, basically. And I'm sure you're aware of that as well. Like, I haven't spoken to him before.
Yeah.
It was just nice to connect like personally. But yeah, on to like his run. So it was funny. He had Stanislas Wawrinka in the first round in singles, but they also played doubles together as well. So they played doubles, I believe, on the Monday, but lost. And then they played their singles match against each other on the Tuesday. Yeah. And again, like a high quality match. Obviously, we all know the score. It was 3 tiebreak sets. I was impressed with Francis's level, like in terms of like just obviously Stanislas is a 3-time Grand Slam champion, like so powerful as well. Like he's a powerful guy, and like kind of seeing that as well, being there in person, like you really do it kind of does it justice, because I don't think TV, a lot of, to be fair, watching tennis on TV doesn't really do the players justice.
No, not at all.
In my opinion, not like, and I think people are probably, the listeners could probably attest to that as well. Like when you actually hear in person, like, yeah, it's just, the level's insane basically. But yeah, back to the match. Like, what did you make of the level, both players?
Yeah, so as you know, I kind of dropped in and out, like I watched large chunks of it. And yeah, I mean, I thought Francis was clearly the better player. You know, he didn't face a break point through the first three and three quarter sets, and you know Wawrinka was serving well, and that was obviously grass isn't his best surface, and he's also coming back from surgery and injury, so he's kind of like his mobility isn't the best, but he was serving really well, and that was keeping him in it. But when the rally started, a lot of them, Francis was winning. He's winning against his second serve as well. So he was a better player, and you know he told you that how much he likes grass, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you could see like just the way the way it kind of allows him to be creative with the drop shots,
such good hands,
come into the net. And yeah, he clearly loves that. Obviously, he won the Nottingham Challenger last year. Mm. He went to serve it out, and then I think nerves got the better of him. He was up 5-4, 30-love in the third set on his serve. And then, yeah, he came to the net a couple of times, gave Wawrinka a couple of, difficult passing shots. Well, he came in on a couple of like not great approaches, and kind of he got past, and yeah, that it kind of changed from there. Yeah. So yeah, clearly he tends to he's over the past 3 years he's had a lot of 3-set matches. And I don't know, just in the tight moments against the best players, if you aren't like fully there, that they will break you back, and then they won't give you another chance. So.
No, and I agree with that completely. And I don't know, I don't want to like kind of dwell too much on it, because I think it was a tough kind of draw, to be fair, even though, like you said, Stanislas is coming back from injury and like the operation and stuff, but he's a quality player. Like, so I think Francis shouldn't be too disheartened, but like you said, he was the better player for like a large chunk of that match. So I can imagine like the disappointment would be quite raw. But yeah, like again, seeing Francis on grass, like his game is very like well suited to the surface. So, and again, that's kind of like what makes me just feel like quite optimistic. And sorry about the noise you could hear in the background. We're trying to trying to record in the press room, but yeah, we've got guests. Anyway, yeah, like seeing Francis on grass, like it's exciting, and I just feel like, yeah, he can put a run together. He's obviously playing Eastbourne as well next week, and we'll be there for that, which is quite exciting for us as well. So yeah, like I'm hoping he can put a run together at Eastbourne and obviously at Wimbledon too. He did have a big win last year, obviously against Tsitsipas in the first round, which was like pretty huge. I think he reached the third round, I think, because he beat Pospisil in the second round. I think he lost in the third round. I can't remember who to though, but yeah, I'm feeling good about Francis on the grass. Staying.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
Do you mind chatting outside? We're just recording a podcast.
Sorry. Cheers. Thank you. Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, just PJ, that's maybe. Oh wow, I'm keeping this all in, by the way. This is class. Just to mainly like showing his authority, you know. yeah, staying on the grass. Like Tuesday was a big day in terms of like news breaking. So it was funny when I was on the court. Well, I was watching Jubb versus Botic. News broke about Serena basically preparing for Wimbledon. And also she tagged Eastbourne in like her post on Instagram, which I'm sure everybody's seen now. But yeah, like Lucy messaged me before like I arrived like on site, just with the post of Serena, and I was like, oh my god, like this is huge. And then I couldn't find Tamini. I think you were in the press room. I think. And it was just crazy because like, yeah, I'm there like watching Jubb, and then I get a notification on my phone. Like the Guardian, Tamini Carrier was like literally written about Serena already, like in terms of her being like prepping for Wimbledon. So yeah, just quickly to me, like on that, like how excited are you to see Serena back? And also, yeah, like were you surprised by the fact that, yeah, she's making her return? It'd be like a full year since she's played on tour.
Yeah. In a weird way, I'm not shocked. Certainly, like, given that she hasn't played for a year and that she's, you know, like, I don't think she'd been playing much tennis, particularly at the beginning of the year. There were, like, I think, totally valid questions over whether she was ever going to come back and, you know, whether she'd kind of just moved on. If there were people, like, discussing, even, like, her fans, like, how she should retire, you know, should she... you know, just play doubles with Venus at the US Open and then, you know, walk off into the night or something. So there's definitely a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, obviously she kind of hinted that she wanted to return. She did a thing with, of all people, Aaron Rodgers, the NFL player, where she was like, oh, I'll be back at Wimbledon. And but Serena says a lot of, and she also, you know, there was a few like videos of her that showed her like on a tennis court. But, you know, Serena says a lot of things. Like I was actually thinking, like, 10 years ago, Serena was like, she said in an interview, I don't love tennis. And that became, like, a huge thing. Yeah, she's still here. So I didn't believe her there. So she says a lot. But clearly she was planning to come back. And especially with, like, Patrick Mouratoglou, you know, obviously she doesn't need him. But the fact that he stepped away seemed an indication that maybe, you know, she was uncertain about her future. Yeah. But... I mean, here she is, so it's going to be interesting. We'll first see what shape she's in, how she's playing. I think clearly that there's still like probably some uncertainty about her level, I guess, just because she's only playing doubles at, at Eastbourne with Ons Jabeur, which is, I guess, which is, that's very interesting.
A fellow African, love that.
Yeah. and yes, so
She's only playing doubles, so she's not playing singles.
Yes, so so for now she's only in the doubles draw. That is, we have until Friday to request a singles wild card. So she could request one by then.
Do you think she will?
I don't know. I think it just depends on how she's playing and how she's feeling on the court. You know, how much time she's had to be hitting that full, 100%. But it's interesting because I don't know, that just tells me that she's not fully there yet.
Sorry to cut you, but slight flex on my part. I did message Jameer and was like, we're so hyped, speaking for myself and Lucy, very hyped to see Serena back on the court. This is just got everybody very excited. And he replied basically saying, she's been working her ass off. She's been putting in work.
And
I'm hoping, like you said, in terms of level, we don't know where she's at. But I think, it's Serena Williams, man.
It could just be that she's, I don't know, that she just wants to fill the grass and in a match situation without playing singles. I don't know. But yeah, we'll see, right?
No expectations whatsoever as well. It's just good to see her back. Yeah. So very, very excited.
And someone, I think, on Twitter, which I think the Body Serve podcast, said that, after following Serena for so long, there's no point of ever predicting anything she does. and that's just another example, So, man, I actually, it's funny, in Paris, I weirdly started because at the French Open, that was the first time I'd been there since 2019. Okay. And that was the year when, you had, remember when she was, she arrived injured and she got someone took a picture of her when she was at Disney World with Olympia in a wheelchair. And that also happened with the Dominic Thiem press conference thing. So I was just thinking man, miss the the drama and I know it's never a dull day with Serena. Yeah, so yeah. I think as long as she's playing, just enjoy it, because
100%.
There's always gonna be something, talk about with her.
That is well said. I completely agree. Just quickly to me, because obviously I don't want to keep you for too long. You've got a lot to do. Just from my perspective or point of view, being at Queens on site, this was the first time I've literally got to see kind of what it feels like to be a proper tennis journalist. It's a lot. You guys do incredible work, basically. I just want you to know that, in terms of
thank you.
No, it's fact. You put in a lot of hours. The kind of turnaround in terms of the stories you kind of put out and the quality of those stories too, that shouldn't go unnoticed. And basically you need to be applauded. So yeah, massive shout out to you.
Thank you.
It's fine. Just quickly, actually, you said, you're in Paris. Can you just sum up what that kind of experience was like in terms of being at Roland Garros? Because it was your first time since when?
2019.
Wow, okay. So yeah, how did it compare to 2019?
I'd say first of all, it's changed. Everything's changed in Roland Garros because they expanded the grounds. They have the Simone Mathieu court. Yeah. I think it was there in 2019, but now they have the roof and it's much bigger. Before it used to be probably the most claustrophobic slam. The space was, there was no space at all.
Lucy calls it the ghetto, but anyway.
She's not wrong. But it would be during the middle of the day, it would be so packed. You wouldn't be able to get anywhere because people would just be too many people in such a small space. But now it's a lot bigger. It was cool because it just felt like the first proper slam off since it isn't over, but since COVID began. In that all of the media were back, all of the press conferences were in person rather than by Zoom, and it was obviously so that was the good part. It was pretty intense just because it's now you have the night session, which I don't like, and I don't think many
a lot of people
most people don't like it. I mean, it's okay for it's good for fans. that, you know, people who work, that they get to see more tennis, like, when they're not working. But I think the players hate it, and, you know, it's just long, really long days for everyone. But it was a, you know, that was a good slam. I had two, like, dominant champions in the end with Nadal and Świątek.
Were they your picks?
Yeah. I mean, Świątek, yeah, 100%. Nadal, yeah. But it's still, I mean, there are still question marks, but at the same time, it's Nadal at Roland Garros. Yeah. So you can't really ever bet against him, in my opinion, anyway. Some people do, like, but against Djokovic and stuff. But yeah, that was my, yeah.
Fair play. Were you surprised by the performance in terms of the level of Novak Djokovic in that match?
I was surprised that he kind of just wasn't ready to, because Nadal was ready, you know. And like he said, like, after the match, he was like, because, you know, Nadal wasn't in the best form. Felix played really, really well.
Only player to take him to 5 sets.
Yeah, only the third person to ever do that, you know, to play a 5-set match with Nadal at Roland Garros. Yeah. And he played really well, but Nadal was kind of, you know, he was off, and then he only, like, performed at the end. Like, he took it out of Felix's hands. Like, Felix, like, knew, like, he did everything right, and it was just Nadal at Roland Garros. But still, like, Nadal wasn't playing his best tennis. But against Djokovic, like, he said afterwards, like, I have my plan A, plan B, plan C, whatever, but against Djokovic, like, only the plan A is, you know, will work. So that's what I had to bring, and that kind of makes it simpler. Whereas with Djokovic, like, you thought I was surprised that he couldn't get up to that level as well, and, like, and match Nadal for longer. And he got, you know, I mean, it's crazy what Nadal does, and with his foot as well, which is still a question mark for Wimbledon.
He is playing Wimbledon, though, isn't he?
I mean, he's trying to. It seems like he will, to be honest. Like, it seems like so far that the operation he did, the radio frequency ablation, I think it is, that he did on his foot, it seems to be going well, because he's been training on grass in Mallorca. So, yeah, he'll. I think he's clearly trying to be there and doesn't seem to have had a setback yet. So.
No, well, yeah, good luck to Rafa. Obviously, we hope to see him.
Yeah, and also, might as well talk about Coco and how, like...
Oh, of course, yeah.
How, yeah, that was a crazy 2 weeks as well with her. You know, I did think Coco was the favourite to reach the final.
I did as well.
Yeah, she had a clear shot, and it was just impressive to see how she just went through the draw, you know, didn't drop a set until the final. And, you know, she was within herself, played really well when she needed to. And I guess most of all, just impressed with just how she's matured and how, like, you know, she was obviously always really, even like when she was 15, she was mature for her age. But, like, between then and now, there's like huge difference. And she was, like, after the matches, she was constantly saying, like, you know, I've realized that tennis isn't everything, you know, that it's not the end of the world. And she kind of recognized that when she was younger. Well, she said one thing she said was that when she was younger, she, you know, it was she just became too stressed and
trying to please other people.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
But just like too, like, she wanted it a bit too much, and, you know, to the point where she gave the example of last year against Krejcikova when she lost in the quarterfinal as, like, a time when she had, like, 5 set points in the first set, and she was just she just stressed herself out, basically. And now she's, like, has a lot more perspective. And the second, really interesting thing she said was that, like, people would always tell her she's the next Serena, to the point where at some point she, like, began to believe that. And now she, like, realizes that she, you know, she shouldn't. And I don't know, it was just cool to see, like, that amount of self-awareness from an 18-year-old still. And because, you know, then you know, this is another story, but you had, like, 19-year-old Holger Rune who's like, you know, who's just immature, very immature.
I don't mind Holger Rune, you know.
No.
Like, but yeah. I hear you.
But I just mean, like, the comparison. I don't just see someone who,
100%. But I think massive credit should go to her parents. Like,
yeah, for sure.
They've done an incredible job with her. Like, and obviously she has a new coach on board as well now, like, who's helping out. And you can see, like, the development in, like, her overall game. And like you said, just her maturity would always amaze me. Like, the fact that she's 18 now. But like you said, when she was 15, she was still very impressive in terms of, like, her mentality. So, yeah, man, Coco, like, We've got a special one there, 100%.
And I just say on that, like, when you have that amount of hype for as a young player, that can go badly, you know, can go in any direction. So it is to her parents and also herself, like, a credit to them for even forgetting about the tennis, just being able to stay on the right path mentally and, you know, to continue to move forward.
100%. And obviously, good luck to Coco. She's competing in Berlin at the Bet One Open. Good luck to Coco there. And also a massive shout out to Alicia Parks. And it's not Alicia, it is Alicia. Got a massive win against Qin Wen
Zheng.
Of China, the Chinese number one, who's like in really good form. But that was Parks' first top 50 win. So she's through to the second round where she'll play Uns Jabeur in the second round, who's the top seed. So good luck to Parks there. And just on the grass, we kind of give you a quick roundup. Felix Auger-Aliassime, he's through to the second round in Halle. Got a good three set win over Marcus Guion in the first round, and he plays Mackenzie McDonald in the second. So yeah, good luck to Felix in Halle. I want to say that's actually it, Tamani, to be fair, because I don't want to keep you for too long. And this has just been a quick kind of, just a roundup pod for Queens. I don't know if there's anything else you want to...
You kind of talked about it, but has it been like...
Yeah, I'm still buzzing. The fact that I'm here through the platform and not my work, I feel very proud, basically. And obviously I wish Lucy was here as well, but we're going to be in Eastbourne next week. So that's going to be quite special. And like I said, we're going to record from there too. And I hope you'll be able to join us for that episode. So I think to kind of get a feel for what it feels like to be a proper tennis journalist, I can definitely get used to it, basically. Hopefully you'll be seeing a lot more of me in these press rooms.
And there's a lot of opportunity to talk to players or to their teams.
100%.
So
I think more of that to come, hopefully. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Continue to look out for us, because like I said, we'll be in Eastbourne next week. So we'll bring you another episode from Eastbourne. Until then, guys, thank you so much and enjoy the tennis, or the grass court tennis, because it's now grass court season. Thanks to Amy.
Thank you.
Cheers.